I was at Sussex University as a student, and part of my studies were about the seaside and seaside entertainment. And I came across some references to, obviously, Punch and Judy and various performers on the beach, but particularly concert parties and piro troupes. And it was a whole area of things that there was very little material on them that was written down or recorded at all. But I actually managed to find that there were about four or five troupes that used to perform in Brighton, and that there were about 500 troops between the wars all over the coastal resorts. And being a practical sort of chap, I didn't want to just write about it. I decided the best way to find out about it was actually to do it.
One, two, three!
By the sea, by the sea, by the beautiful sea.
There have been people working the seafronts of Britain since mid-Victorian times, when the British seaside took off. And at one point there would be, certainly towards the beginning of this century, up until actually really until the Second World War, there were piro troops on every single beach in the country, really. Every seaside resort would have its own troop. That tradition very much died during the Second World War, mainly because all these troops got enlisted and became ENSA.
We meet the odd piro, ex-piro, when we're on our peregrinations, but the initial research for the act came from a thesis that Uncle Taco did when he was at university on seaside entertainment, and he turned up all this stuff about all these piro troops that performed up and down the country, and he's got a huge collection of postcards and piro memorabilia, which provided very useful visual source material, and also in terms of the act. The act is, in fact, in terms of the tradition, is more like a combination of the piros and the blacked-up minstrels, nigger minstrels as they were called in those days, which were more, they were more vigorous, they were more peripatetic, they moved around the place, whereas the piros tend to be based on stages and use pianos and do more dance routine-based things and sketches. It was definitely a mini-theatre show or a variety show.
The image we always had when we first thought of it was, if we performed here on this beach, this sloping stony beach, where people are kind of laid out like lizards on their towels, if we were to perform to somebody a song and they got up and ran into the sea, the idea was that we could follow them playing and singing to the edge of the sea as well, and to have the mobility to be able to play as we moved, and to carry everything with us. We don't have any microphones, the whole thing's acoustic.
It's a smashing day in Filey Bay. The sun's out, the people are burgeoning all along the seafront, and we're going to have a smashing time. We're just going into the scout hut to get changed.
Our day normally starts at about 11 o'clock, having had breakfast, hopefully, most of the time. And then we will convene in our dressing room, shed, caravan, corner of a hall, wherever it is we're happening to make up that day.
I hate this stuff. Really dries your skin out. Yeah, when you got greasy skin.
I haven't.
I got dry skin.
Well, I was familiar with the outfit, which the traditional piro outfit from the Commedia dell'arte is the white, usually satin, shiny material all over with black pom-poms and a white conical hat with pom-poms on as well. But yeah, in terms of the costume, I mean, I was sort of prepared for the costume because I knew roughly what it involved, and I've always liked dressing up in ludicrous things anyway.
We will then proceed to put on our makeup, which takes about an hour. The characters tend to take over towards the end of that making up period. It's good that it's an hour, and it's good that you're changing your face and your attitude and your character as the slap goes on. And once you've got your cosy on, then you then become the particular character you are in the band. We just, it's time to gel.
Now you look like the Emperor from Star Wars.
Oh, I do indeed look like the Emperor from Star Wars.
Somebody want to do my front?
I think the characterisation in any troupe of performers evolves over time, and obviously draws very heavily on on the people who are behind the mask, if you like.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. We are the 1, 2, 3...
The Pier Rotters!
And that is featuring...
Mr. Macko, Mayor of Planet Funny.
Yes, and I, Sir Squacko, the Prince of Porridge.
I am Dirty Dr. Dacko, and it's so nice to meet you all, you lovely people.
Hello, Boy Gacko, talking Northerner.
And of course, myself, the Reverend Uncle Tacko, and the only serious Piero. Oh!
I'm somebody who has a tendency to organise people and to boss them around and to be avuncular. And I became Uncle Tacko, I think, virtually the first year. But I didn't become the Reverend Uncle Tacko until about 2 to 3 years ago. That's emerged. And the others have all gradually established their characters over the years, and we build on them each year, slight differences all the time. I have a red nose now on account of the fact that I'm convinced that Uncle probably drinks substantially. And as part of his ageing process, I think a blooming nose is appropriate. But that's something that I've started to do this year.
Oh, there's funny little rituals. The doctor always gets to the point where he's putting his scarf on, drapes it over his face, which is by now made up, and starts making impressions of the Emperor from Star Wars. The prince tends to explode when he becomes the Prince of Porridge by calling us all minions. Good morning, minions, he'll say. As we go out, Uncle's always the last out of the door. Uncle's always the last in.
And the moment we go through that door, we're in character. We go through making loads of noise, being silly, saying, good afternoon, sir, how are you? Making loads of noise, squeaking the horns, whatever. For the first 5 minutes or so, we just all rant at everyone continuously. So there's just this noisy bunch of clowns, heroes, wandering along. And that draws attention to us and gives us a sense of purpose of having sort of made a distinct break between being ourselves and being the Pier Rotters.
I think part of our original pitch to Filey was, do you know there used to be a Piero troupe in your town and we can do that again? We then knew about Andy Kane's troupe in Filey. We'd also heard that somewhere there was a gravestone with a Piero hat on it. And we thought, well, that'd be a bit weird. We're going tourism time. Let's go and find it. So, I mean, Filey's a very small town. We went and found the graveyard in Filey and wandered around till we found this gravestone, and it was extraordinary, really. So it's a case of, well, yeah, there's a definite, we're tapping into our roots a bit here. So we sang him a song, because we fancied it, and so every year we go back and sing him another song, really.
Just at the graveside of Andy Kane, who was the Piero here in Filey for ages and ages and ages, and as you can see, there's a gravestone here with a Piero hat on it, and we always come up here and we'll sing a song, really. And we leave him our postcard as well, there in the middle of the grave. And we're going to sing Macko's song this time. We normally sing him Deep Sea Blues, but we're going to sing him Seashells this time, which is a song that Macko wrote about Brighton when we were all in love once. And it's rather pretty. And that's the prince tuning up in the background. Yeah.
I think he's probably sick of Deep Sea Blues. He's heard it several times, hasn't he? Yeah.
Anyway, it says on the gravestone, he died on the 22nd of November, 1941, aged 74, respected in life, lamented in death, and then there's kind of flowers going up the side of it, and the Piero conical hat at the base.
And our hats all over the grave. Yeah. Show our respect for him. There we go.
1, 2, 3, 4. Seashells, I hear your voice in seashells, but I can't hear the words you are saying. Memories are fading.
Well, we sang Seashells yesterday, and that's one I wrote years ago, about 9 years ago now. It's a song about falling in love and Brighton and nostalgia and all those things mixed in together, regret. A lot of what Brighton is sort of... I find Brighton quite a reflective place, especially in the winter and at the end of summer when everything's closing down. There's that sort of rather mournful feeling at the end of October when everyone's sort of shutting up their shops along the the promenade, and it stops being a tourist resort and becomes a town again. But it's a lovely thing to witness year after year if you live in Brighton like I did for 9 years.
The song has another meaning, I think, for the group as a whole, though, because the group as a whole, and therefore the characters individually, have very flirtatious natures when we're on the street. And so the notion of a love affair or something that's connected to the season and kind of ends with the season is something that's part of the way the act works.
When we're walking between the two piers in Brighton, there's certain people that have been there for years that we all say hello to.
There's a shellfish stall which we always go along and sing them a song and try and attract some trade, but also cheer them up and drum up support. And we always pop in on the first aid post where we call her Matron. She has a red cross and she's got a little arch on the seafront, and we always go in and do her a song because she always looks lonely there. And all she gets to do is tend wounds, so we go and sing her a song, cheer her up, and a good old laugh with her.
Coming down the street, I ask you very confidentially, ain't she sweet? Oh, ain't she nice? Look her over once or twice. I ask you very confidentially, ain't she nice?
Just cast her eye,
just cast her eye.
In her direction,
hold me on mine,
hold me on mine.
Ain't she perfection?
Look at that perfection.
Oh, I repeat, don't think she's kind of neat. I ask you very confidentially, ain't she sweet?
We're called the Pier Rotters after the rotting West Pier, and that is partly to evoke that sense of nostalgia. A classic mournful image of Brighton, I think, is the fact that the West Pier has been falling into the sea for the last 30 years, and that captures the poignancy of the seaside in days gone by. And in Brighton you've got the sort of the counteracting thing of the Palace Pier, which is a big, commercial, successful pier working in a very 90s fashion, obviously, and you've got the West Pier as like a moment frozen in time, 30 years ago, of how piers were and what point seaside entertainment had reached.
I'll tell you an old-fashioned story, what Uncle used to relate of the rotters at West Pier in Brighton and how it got in such a state. You've heard of the West Pier in Brighton and how it rots out in the sea. So gather around and I'll tell you the tale as Uncle related to me. Go on, Uncle.
Most of the information about Pierrots, Pierrot troops, actually exists in pictures, in images, photographs. The seaside was one of the first places where photography became a kind of popular art form, populist art form. You know, people dunking the plates in the buckets on the beach, and people would have a snapshot of their time at the seaside. And the majority of seaside information is that. It was never because it's a popular entertainment form, it was never recorded formally. Nobody ever did 78 recordings, you know, gramophones. Nobody wrote down very much. There are a few bits and bobs. There's a thing called the concert party folio. Whenever I go to a second-hand shop, we always try and find if there are any of them. They sometimes write some of the patter down. And a lot of it was oral. You know, it's been lost. It wasn't written down. Popular entertainment is ephemeral in many ways, and the tradition is through doing and not through somehow preserving it.
Often when we're walking along, we will come across an old deer, and he'll be sat there having a butties in a bandstand or wherever on the seafront on a bench. And she remembers Pierrots of old, and she seems to think that we're them. So we'll walk past and she'll say, I haven't seen you boys for ages. Where have you been? And it's been 50 years. She doesn't seem to think that. She doesn't realise that we're new ones and we're not Max Miller. Hello, Maxie, she'll say.
But at the same time, I mean, we incorporate things that are a lot more contemporary. I mean, we do Bonzo Dog Band numbers, who are a sort of comparable band in as much as they're a sort of satirical yet musical act. But also being things like Monty Python, punk rock, I mean, all these things influence us, you know. We'll occasionally sort of adopt a punk attitude or whatever. We're capable of dropping in those references, or heavy rock references, or hip-hop references, whatever it might be. We can incorporate those because that's exactly in the tradition of the Pierrots. The Pierrots were about incorporating popular references of the day, giving people a sense of being up to the minute, making up to the minute jokes, and we've continued that, really. So we're traditional in the sense that we're following in a tradition, but we certainly aren't a recreation of the old Pierrots. We're actually a development of the Pierrots. This is the Pierrots in the 90s. You know. Had Pierrots continued non-stop since the war, maybe they would have ended up like us.
We're all going on a
summer holiday. No more working for a week or two. Fun and laughter on a summer holiday. No more worries for me or you. For a week or two.
Yeah, yesterday, while we were performing Summer Holiday in Brighton, I had a bit of an accident with my washboard. It wasn't entirely my fault, I have to say. I was being grabbed in the genital regions by an uncle repeatedly, because he obviously thought it was a very amusing thing to do. And obviously, in retrospect, it was a very amusing thing to do. But at the time, my reaction was to jerk my thigh up into my washboard, went smashing into my lip, which left it cut in a couple of points, outside and inside. And it's not very nice when something like that happens in character, because you're having to be this sort of very anarchic, abandoned character. Suddenly something happens that makes you feel quite vulnerable and unpleasant and angry and horrible. All the things that happen when you suddenly get hurt, all those immediate reactions. And trying to cope with those when you've got a clown face on and you're meant to be entertaining people is difficult. I find usually the best thing to do is just disappear. And again, you know that everyone else is going to sort of move in and could carry on for 5-10 minutes if necessary. So that instantly takes the sting out of it.
The instinctive thing, of course, for the rest of us then is to want to go and see Malcolm and see what he's done and see how he is and stuff. And we have to actually deny that. In the same way that he has to deny sort of his rage or his fear or his panic or whatever you have when you hurt yourself, which we've all, I'm sure, experienced from time before now. We have to sort of not actually try and minister to him or just see what's happened. We actually have to sort of ignore him in order to not let the focus drift too much to what's happened.
I think any group of people that trust and love one another will always have a degree of tension and friction. I think that's healthy in that you're constantly honing yourself and aware of your relationship with the others. And we are, in many ways, we do live on an edge. We don't know what's going to happen next. We don't know where we're going to be or who we're going to meet or what's going to happen. It's new and it's fresh every single time, and sometimes it goes horribly wrong.
Yeah, on occasions it has turned quite nasty. I remember we got stoned in Worthing, and that's nothing to do with the use of any recreational drugs. It was, we were walking along the beach in Worthing, and some lads decided it'd be highly amusing to lob rocks at us, so they did, and so we went away. So I think that was about 1984, that was. We weren't very good at dealing with lads in 1984, but again, what we find we can do now is, I suppose, because we can be aggressively camp.
Why are you chewing that keyring?
So I feel like it.
Oh, that's nice. Does it taste nice?
Yeah.
And what are these strange things on your feet that you're wearing? What are they?
Roller boots.
Roller boots?
They were turbo to people, so I...
And how did you come to achieve this? This
what?
Thing on your wrist?
Oh, I've done that today. Jumped. There's a thing down the beach called the bandstand. I jumped over it, lost my foot and put my hands out.
Oh, no.
No.
Paul.
And did matron sort you out?
Yeah.
Good old matron.
Oh, hey.
Is that junior matron?
I think we became aware of how camp the act was, rather than deliberately setting out to make it that way, and I think we've tended to stress that a little bit more since. The camp element is something that is very useful for especially debunking, again, groups of lads, lagerouts, whatever, because they're blokes like that, their main fear is being seen to be camp or less than masculine or whatever, and if you can just completely confront that and make it clear that you're proud to be terribly camp and feminine and wearing ludicrous bridal satin and whatnot, and the more they go on at you, the more camp you're going to act. It completely disempowers them.
One time, Uncle Taco was nearly thrown over a pier by a group of lads who were about 30 in number, and the boys were singing them a song, and for a joke they picked Uncle up and were about to throw him over the side, but Uncle managed to turn the situation by picking up this 15-stone bloke and carrying him back in. So situations are easy to defuse if you know how, and that comes with experience, and it also comes with a strength knowing that you've got four other blokes behind you.
The act was very much formulated as a busking act. I mean, we didn't really do many earning gigs in the early days, so a lot of the dynamic of the group derives from the fact that we used to work in the streets and work in the streets for money, so trying to hold people for at least 20-25 minutes for a 4 or 5 song set. So a lot of the structure and the dynamic of the set and the reason it works so well has evolved from the necessity to hold people to a certain point where you do a ballad, where you then collect. So we usually used to do a couple of dynamic numbers, something that's a bit quirky or unusual, or has a specific gag to it, maybe as a third number, then a ballad, where usually Uncle Taco would wander off into the crowd and collect.
Bottling as far as any street performance and Pierrot troupes and concert parties are concerned means collecting the money at the end of the set.
In the old days of busking, the money was always collected in a bottle. The reason being to prevent the bottler nicking bits of it, so that once, or other people nicking bits of it, you could put coins in, and then it's very hard to get them out again because of the narrow neck. And at the end of the day, the bottle would be smashed and the proceeds shared. And it was a way of preventing easy theft, and it was something that was easy to clutch onto.
Yeah, the bottleneck was very small, so members of the audience that performers used to call batmen couldn't get their hands in and take coins out when they were supposed to be putting money in.
And there's another little ritual that attaches to the whole thing of bottling, which is certain little jokes that we've come to use in order to keep people there, because quite often people will try and scarper. But if you can give them, if you can either shame them slightly or give them another little laugh just before you take their money off them, they do seem to stay around a bit more. And the two jokes are, one of them, which the doctor's very good at saying, aren't you, Doctor?
Yes, I am.
This is a magic bag.
A magic bag? Why so a magic bag, Sir?
Because
Squacko?
It has the ability, Doctor, to turn your money into our money. That's one of them. That's very funny. Yes. We all like that one. And what's the other one?
The other one is this is a magic bag also, because when we tell you it's for the collection of your money, half of you disappear.
Good gigs are always at the seaside when it's sunny. Actually, quite often at the seaside when it's rainy or miserable, because we can work well at that place. It's to do with people's attitudes in the location that you're in. So the seaside's great. Festivals are good, whether it's a seaside festival like the Filey Edwardian Festival or Bradford Festival. I have to confess that the ones that I don't like are the shopping centre gigs, the ones where you're booked by a local authority to entertain people when actually all they want to do is dash into Next or a bankrupt stock shop, where they don't want to be entertained, but the shopkeepers think that having entertainment might attract people in.
One particular local authority decided it would be very amusing to have a seaside festival on a big roundabout in the middle of their city centre. And we were a seaside act, so they booked us and they got some lorries and put a lot of sand down and they built themselves a nice pier out of scaffolding, and we went and we played on there, and we were drowned out by the fact that they'd actually got a PA and they'd recorded some seagulls, so they played seagulls all the time, which was loud, and we were drowned out by the buses.
Sidmouth was a mile away from the sort of shopping precincts that we've been playing partly this summer. It's the extreme of what we want to do. It's the absolute perfect place for us. There are very few places that fit into that sort of aspiration we have to play fairly unspoiled seaside resorts where everyone still goes and has a good time. It's not just a retirement place, it's full of young people as well. At least it is for the festival, and it's probably quite sedate the rest of the year. But an event like this is absolutely perfect for us. It couldn't really be better.
It's a small town, really. It's very reminiscent of Filey. It's sort of 1950s, relatively unspoilt British seaside town. But with one vital difference, and that is that this week, and for 1 week only, it is absolutely crammed full of people at the Sidmouth Folk Festival. I've not quite seen so many beards and tankards hanging off the belt, and indeed people playing didgeridoos, funnily enough, than I've seen anywhere, than I've seen the Sidmouth this week.
Concert parties and pierrots are part of a folk tradition, by which I suppose I mean an oral culture. So I think there's a direct correlation between what concert party and pierrots, and before them the nigger minstrels, and before them the fairground folk, and before them the itinerant performers that would have gone all round the various urban centres, and also performing on the holidays or holy days. It goes right back through time. I mean, in that sense, it's very much a folk tradition. And a lot of the songs that we sing are folk songs in the true sense of the word, that they're shared commonly by ordinary people. When we sing I Do Like to Be Beside the Seaside, it's a part of a folk memory, something that everybody connects with. Everybody can sing, from the oldest person in an old folks' home to the youngest kid in the pram. They can all sing that chorus. I think part of the strength of pierrots is that or the pierrotters, is that we're not frozen in aspic. We don't try and create a museum piece. We're trying
to make something live and breathe now.
It must have been incredible in the old days when the Pierrots came along or the Punchy Judy came along, and for that 20, 30 minutes everybody was together rather than apart. And we do that. That's what we do. We bring people together on the beach who would normally be solo and create and turn them into a crowd of people, into a community.
Another instance of these special gigs might be we find a child crying with its mother, sitting there having a miserable time. Maybe it's had a cat or a wasp sting, or it's just having a miserable day, feeling a bit sick. And we'll sing it a song, the child smiles and brightens up and starts giggling. And we obviously make the child's day, that we make those people's day, and we call those WIAAs, those gigs, which stands for W-I-A-A, what it's all about. That's what we do it for. I don't think we carry on doing it, money or no money, were it not for the odd weir, and we come away thinking that's what we can do that no one else can do.
I have every desire to be doing this when I'm 65. I have no intention of stopping, and I would love to be able to do it with these people. I think it's a wonderful and a precious opportunity, and I'd like to grow old with it. I don't want to have to stop. There's no reason why we should.
Goodbye, goodbye, we're leaving you, goodbye, goodbye. We're from goodbye, patata, patata, goodbye, goodbye. We're leaving you, goodbye, goodbye. We're from goodbye, but do you do? Hey, now,
goodbye, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. You've been watching the one and only, the Pierrotters, the very first Pierrot troupe for 50 years. That is Mr. Macko, Sir Squacko, Dr. Dacko, Boy Gacko, and yours truly, Uncle Taco. See you again in the sun by the seaside. Have a lovely time. Bye-bye.
Goodbye. We're leaving you. Goodbye. Goodbye. We wave a fond goodbye.